some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fate. But I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in for dying. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing, be warned. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Run down with life, I'm fighting in for that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either portal. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm. I've been away for a while from White Resistance Radio, and I'm glad to be back and glad to be helping out Pastor Tom Robb and his fantastic life work there. I'm running for election in the city I live in Canada. That's Hamilton, Ontario. Hamilton is at the extreme west end of Lake Ontario. Lake Ontario is like a lozenge, and at the extreme west end is Hamilton. And it's a steel city of about 570,000 people. It's divided. It has a somewhat left-wing establishment. It at times has been a left-wing stronghold, but occasionally conservatives break through, like myself, and I certainly hope to do that in the municipal election, which will be on October 26th. From time to time, I'm going to come back to this, but what are the issues? Well, the issue I'm going to really emphasize, not because it's the most important issue politically, immigration and free speech are far more important, but they're not necessarily municipal issues. The issue I'm going to emphasize particularly is a return to fiscal responsibility and fix the roads. The roads in Hamilton are a disgrace. Potholes, cracks, deteriorating pavement. But that's not the only thing. The powers that be here don't tend to like the motorists. You know, it's part of this disgusting hypocrisy, you know. Cars are bad. The automobile really bothers the socialist. I'll tell you why. Because it represents, especially in North America here, individual freedom. My generation, and I think the generation of before me, when you're in your early teen years, the thing you were hoping for most of all, other than a girlfriend, was to be able to get your temporary driver's license, to be able to drive a car. Why? Because it gave you a lot of freedom. You could move places.
You could not be entirely dependent on public transportation or a ride from your folks. It represented individual freedom. And there's a whole school of American literature that's based on the open road. Some of the writers like Jack Kerouac at the end of the Second World War, the attraction of being able to jump in your automobile and head out across the country was really highly attractive. It meant freedom. And that's not a bad thing. Well, anyway, the socialists don't like freedom. They like control. And now the arguments over the years have become more and more varied and sophisticated. But one is that we would be much more controllable if we had a 15-minute city. A 15-minute city meant that you could get anywhere within that city, and I think it's on foot, within 15 minutes. So your hospital, your supermarket would all be, and in some versions of this evil dream of the world, of the World Economic Forum, there wouldn't be any choice. You need permission to leave your 15-minute city. It's a form of imprisonment. The automobile makes people just a little too free. You know, for instance, back during the COVID tyranny, with your automobile, your truck, or your car, you could go all the way up to Ottawa for a protest, as the truckers did with the truckers freedom convoy in late January of 2022. You could travel and be with other people. The socialists don't like that. They like people controlled. Then, of course, there are other arguments that we've heard over the last decade or so. Well, cars pollute. Well, to a certain extent, they do, but horses and buggies pollute. Well, what do you think the horse leaves behind itself? And we've made internal combustion engines more and more clean over the years. So that's not the big, should not be the big issue. There's the argument that the automobile uses well, not always. There are, of course, the electric cars, but tends to use the hated gasoline, you know, carbon, and generates carbon dioxide. Ooh, that's bad. No, actually, that's good. Carbon dioxide is essential for plant life. What does a plant do? It converts water and carbon dioxide into food. Without carbon dioxide, we die. Anyway, that's another thing. And there's this antipathy to the automobile on the part of some of the socialists at Hamilton City Hall and many other city halls around Canada. So there's a war on the automobile. So when I ran 2 years ago, 4 years ago in 2022, I billed myself as the motorist friend. So my arguments about the terrible roads isn't just a matter of upkeep. And it's not a priority with the city. But there's other subtle ways that they harass the motorist. For instance, Hamilton is very fond of taking lanes out of important roads for construction. In fact, there was a stretch of Main Street, which is one of the main ways into the city, that was it was taken out from July 2022, when I ran last time, to just about a week ago, 2026. That's 4 years, about an area of about a block and a half. Now, that really messes up traffic. Of a five-lane road, two were taken out. Now, you might say, well, why? Well, what they were doing is there was a building going up, about an eight-story building, and they needed, I guess, some of the construction equipment to be out there in one of the in the two lanes. For 4 years, the building was completed months ago. Why does the road? Why did the road continue to be blocked? Because efficient movement of traffic is simply not a priority of the Hamilton City Council under its present socialist mayor, Andrea Horwath. I saw a similar situation when I was recently in Tokyo, Japan. A building was going up, and from the height of the crane and so on, I deduced that it would be probably about a 16-story building. I would say twice as high as the one in Hamilton. Did they block off a road? Oh, well, yes, they did. For about a day. And after that, the crane was moved inside the area that was going to be built. Roads are very crowded in Japan. It's especially in Tokyo. Tokyo is a city, I believe, of about 16 million people. They can't afford to block roads, and they don't. And it was clear to me that the road blockage would be for the bare minimum of time. In Hamilton, two lanes were taken out of a major road for 4 years and a few weeks. That's because they don't care. In fact, the more traffic is slowed, the better. They like that. Another trick they play in Hamilton and other cities, I've noticed, is they block off a lane with cones. So that means it makes the traffic more congested. It reduces the space that the cars can move in. Well, okay, if they're digging a hole, it makes some sense. If there's been a terrible accident and I have to, clean up, okay, I get that. But very often you'll see an area blocked off and there's nothing happening. There's a section of an off-ramp of an expressway near my home. It's called the Lincoln-Alexander Expressway, and it's an off-ramp onto to Mohawk Street. An entire lane of that off-ramp has been blocked for 2 years. Sometimes there's equipment there. I have seldom seen anybody working. But 2 years, what are they doing? If it was paving, shouldn't that be a couple of days at max? If it's expanding a lane again, it's just blocked off. No explanation. And there it is, month after month after month, constricting traffic. And you see this all over the city. Oh, then there's one of my favorite bugbears, and that's the speed bumps. I know, it's such a wonderful idea. Calm the traffic. No, make the traffic run efficiently. Now, I can almost hear the plaintive objections, but school zones, children, you need to, the traffic has to slow down. okay, yes, sign it to slow down, underline during school hours, you know, specify from whatever it might be, if you want to be overcautious at 8 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon or whatever is suitable, Monday to Friday. And don't have speed bumps there. All they do is damage cars. When I was collecting signatures for my nomination papers, and the way we do it in Ontario is you need 25 voters in your area. That is 25 people who live in the city of Hamilton who are voters, that is Canadian citizens of at least age 18. And they have to sign your nomination paper and with their address, etc. Okay, of the people I approached, two told me that they had seriously damaged their axle or their suspension on either a pothole or one of these horrific speed bumps. I would be in favor of getting rid of every speed bump. Oh, the traffic will be terrible. People will be run over. No. Emphasize your enforcement where it ought to be. School zones, we've got auxiliary police. They're learning to be police. Well, station them there. Station them in a school zone. And they write a ticket of anybody who is exceeding the speed limit during those hours that you're supposed to seriously reduce your speed. In other words, make it practical rather than, I know how we can slow traffic, create big speed bumps. It probably does that. It damages cars. It's more of this treating citizens as children. It's an aggression on our rights. Anyway, so I'm the motorist friend, and that's one big issue I'm going to be running on. But I'm also a nationalist and a traditionalist, and we've lost a lot of ground in Hamilton. It's a very woke city. When I first got here 8 years ago, one of the first things I noticed was a rainbow crosswalk right in front of City Hall. Oh, so progressive, you know, LGBTQ. When I ran in 18, and once again this time, one of my early priorities would be to paint that sucker over. Why should there be the glorification of one tiny minority? Why not a sidewalk in the colors of Germany or Italy, or I don't know how you would have a sidewalk honoring traditional heterosexual couples, traditional families, but I'm sure somebody could figure it out. No, the rainbow sidewalk is part of this glorification that's occurred over the past 20 years of this tiny minority. And whether you look at it from a religious point of view, which is that you are celebrating their deviancy, or if you look at it from a non-judgmental point of view, you're celebrating one tiny minority's peculiarity. Why? There's no reason to, except this pernicious attack on our traditional morals. Okay, another thing that's done is the flags of various causes are sometimes flown at City Hall. I would make it very, very clear. The only flags will be flown from City Hall would be the flag of the city of Hamilton, the flags of Canada. There is, of course, the one you probably have seen, the red maple leaf and the red bars on a white background. And then there is of course, the old red ensign. Now, on another program, I can explain why that has actually never been repealed as the flag of Canada. and the flag of the province of Ontario or any other province of Canada. No other flags. So we don't have to fight against flying the rainbow flag, or now it's slightly doctored new version with a right leaning triangle on the left side of the flag, which apparently stands for the transgendered. Why would we want to celebrate sexual, depending on your point of view, deviancy or peculiarity? Well, why not, is there nothing else we could celebrate? Well, rather than wasting city council time on, well, will we celebrate this group but not that group? Let's just make it the flag of the city of Hamilton, the flags of Canada, and the flags of any other provinces. There's got to be a greater emphasis on the real business of the city, which is, among other things, law and order, building and maintenance of the roads. Those relatively dull things is what makes the city function. Hamilton is a highly taxed city. It's not especially rich, but it's heavily taxed. It's taxed at a much higher rate than the place I used to live, about 30 miles to the east of Hamilton, Port Credit, which is a part of a very well-managed city, managed for many years by an old lady named Hazel McCallion, who is lots of peculiarities, but was very, very hard-nosed about keeping taxes down. And being a leftist city, of course, the city is very attached to trendy causes like DEI. That's diversity, equity, and inclusion. All of those are lies. Diversity usually means not us. If your company is into diversity, it probably won't celebrate Christmas. And when you ask why, well, some people are excluded. I won't get into the Christmas argument right now, but to celebrate something doesn't mean nobody else can participate. Inclusion, it usually means whites and Christians are excluded. And equity, it doesn't mean equal treatment. It means equal results. It is a very anti-white and inefficient way to staff any organization. I would abolish any commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and make hiring and promotion simply on the basis of merit. Everybody can compete, and you will be hired or promoted on the basis of merit. Now that's fair. As a candidate, I already have received a few questionnaires about this and that. And one of the questions I really delighted in answering was a question about what would I do about climate change? What should the city of Hamilton do about climate change? I wrote nothing. If you're religiously inclined, pray. For the very good reason, this is a hoax and a scare tactic. Climate, well, initially, it was global warming. Now, you may remember a character named Al Gore. He was vice president. He ran for president when Bush the second ran, and he lost. That's in 2000. And Al Gore was and is a great alarmist about, well, back then it was called global warming. And we were assured, or he assured us back in 2000, that by 2013, because of global warming, the Earth is getting warmer and warmer. That's not at all certain, incidentally. That the Arctic ice cap will have melted. Have you heard about that one? Yeah, that the Arctic ice cap has melted? Well, it didn't happen. And it's 13 years since the deadline. 26 years since the hysterical warning. And much of Manhattan would be underwater. Have you read about that in the news lately? Well, of course not. It didn't happen. About 10 years ago, it emerged that the at the annual or semi-annual UN hysterical conference on climate, the figures had actually been cooked. That the several studies were fraudulent. The Earth was not warming. And I won't get into this at this time. This is a discussion for another time. But suffice it to say, what we'd been told was not true. Now, there's some argument that the Earth might actually be cooling. So what they did is they very cleverly said, well, it's climate change. Well, the problem with that is, depending on how you read it, climate change every year in much of the on much of this earth, the climate is slightly different from the year before. You know, it might be slightly rainier, or it might be slightly cooler or slightly warmer. But what you can do about it, unless it's a trend, and there are times when the climate will change for over a period of time. Like during the Depression, much of the Great Plains in Canada and the United States went through a very, very dry period, and hence the Dust Bowl and so on. There are certain things we can do to adapt to these periods of change. But we've been sold, or they have tried to sell us, on a bill of goods. It's all the problem of carbon dioxide. As I've already said, carbon dioxide is a good thing. The real cause of changes in climate are sunspots or explosions on the sun. When there are more, the Earth heats up. When there are fewer, it cools down. Well, what can you do about it? Only tongue in cheek, I say pray. If it really concerns you, pray, because there's nothing physically you can do about it. We can adapt, but we cannot stop it, the change. Anyway, so I was very happy to say nothing. And of course, there's no point giving a one-word answer if you... hopefully whoever asked me the stupid question is already having a virtual heart attack. I explained that the whole tale about global warming and climate change is essentially a hoax. And it was all about control. At the various UN conferences, one in Paris, back in 2015, I think, or maybe it was 16, 16, I think, the majority pledged themselves to massive transfers of resources to the third world, because the third world allegedly is suffering more from climate change than any place else on Earth, and so we in the industrial world owe them. Meanwhile, if you really are concerned about carbon production, poor old Canada contributes about 1.2% of the world carbon. Red China and India are huge producers of carbon. So shouldn't they be controlled or punished? Well, no, it's we in the West. And our present prime minister, now whether he's abandoned these ideas or not, I don't know. But before he became prime minister, he was a big champion of more restrictions to fight climate change. In fact, he wrote a book called Values. He said that climate change was an existential threat. It means it threatens our very existence. And it was the greatest issue of the time, one we must simply grapple with. We may have to sacrifice more. In fact, he said, we're going to have to do with less meat, lower temperatures in the winter, higher temperatures in the summer. So in other words, turn the furnace down, maybe not even have air conditioning, less travel, because travel, of course, usually uses diesel fuel or gasoline or so on. Now, he has not completely gone along with that since he became prime minister, and that's another issue entirely. But we were being fed a steady diet of this hysteria, all meant to tax us more and restrict us more in order to fight a problem that didn't exist. So I'm going to, if I am elected mayor, going to be very hard line about any restrictions like this. Now, I said I would agree with those who say, well, there's far more important things in running making the roads efficient and repairing them and keeping them in good order. In the grand scheme of things, yes, but as mayor and city council, those are areas of your responsibility. An area that Hamilton City Council has gotten into that it shouldn't. In other words, instead of doing properly the things it should do, like repairing the roads, it is on various occasions attacked free speech. Now, a good friend of mine was fired by the previous council, not for anything he ever did on the job. He was a computer expert, widely regarded and well liked and appreciated by fellow members of staff. But he had been a leader of a populist organization, a populist website, and one of the notorious enemies of free speech in Canada, Richard Warman, and I've talked about him in the past and we'll talk about him again, unfortunately, came after him and put pressure on the council, which in acts of utter depravity, terminated his employment. So the Hamilton City Council is not well known for its support of free speech. Prior to 2022, there was an occasion where, under the mayor of the time, decided that staff should take measures to restrict the use of public property, like parks or meeting halls, by racist groups. Well, I attempted, in my role as the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, to appear before council as a delegation. Now, that's a democratic right bred into certainly our system in Canada, municipally. before town or city council or board of education, any citizen has the right to appear as a delegation. And in practical terms, what that normally means is that you get 5 minutes, you're given 5 minutes, you register, you don't just show up, but you register, and you're given a time slot, usually near the beginning of the meeting, and you say your piece, usually on an issue that's before council. Well, I thought that this is a good opportunity to further my work for free expression, so I communicated to city council that I would like to appear as a delegation on this particular matter. I was turned down by a vote of 14 to 1. They refused to hear me because, you see, I'm a radical right winger, a white supremacist. No, I'm not saying that on my own. That's the Wikipedia version of the story. And there's a fundamental blindness on the part of city council, and in particular, and this mayor in particular, the incumbent, Andrea Horwath, I'm running against her. And the blindness is this. They do not recognize that freedom of speech is a right, an individual right. And that's not limited by what it is you might say. Oh, if you want to talk about more repression, well, that's fine. If you want to talk about, you're representing a particular special interest ethnic group, that's acceptable. But if you have a reputation for this or that, you can't speak. That's not freedom. And there have been several more examples. This present mayor, 2 summers ago, there was a group called Diagolon. And it's a white nationalist group, and it had participated quite strongly in the freedom protests during COVID. And they wanted to have a meeting. Well, the mayor said this would not be tolerated because they're a hate group. Now, I'm quoting. Hate group is an almost meaningless accusation. What does it tell you about the group? When somebody says that's hate speech, what you can only know is that it's speech that person hates. It doesn't tell you anything about what the speech is, and I would always say, how can you say there's going to be hate at the meeting? The meeting hasn't occurred yet. And you shouldn't have to suffer penalties for what might be. You know, we have this quaint idea in the Anglo-Saxon world that you don't suffer a penalty until you've been charged and convicted. You're innocent until proven guilty. Anyway, that didn't hold, and the mayor made a big noise and so on. Well, Diagolon found a location about 30 miles outside of Hamilton and had a great meeting. I was there and so on. Well, now, another group that just started last year called the Dominion Society, it's going to have, I believe, a day-long conference on August 29th. In Hamilton, so it says, and this has excited the anger of the professional anti-racists and our mayor, who leaves a lot to be desired, and I could dwell on that too, but anyway, she says there's no room for hate in Hamilton, and she's taken it upon herself to write to various venues and businesses to instruct them to be wary of of renting to these people. And furthermore, and this is where, in my opinion, she's absolutely crossed the line, decreed or ordered city staff to make sure that the Dominion Society does not get to rent any city property. Now, why is that so bad? Well, first of all, it's not hers. If she wants to not rent her own backyard, assuming she would do that in the first place, to this or that group, that's her business. But this is public property. That means it belongs to all of us. All of us who are taxpayers have contributed to that. And all of us should have the right to use it for legitimate purposes. And by that, I mean, if it's a meeting room, that should be open to any individual or group to hold a meeting, and, you know, subject to paying a reasonable fee if that's the case, and at reasonable hours, with all that understood, restriction is just a typical woke leftist totalitarian nonsense, and this is something that I would want to stop. There's a lot of groups on Facebook, and one of them is devoted entirely to Hamilton issues. And about a week ago, we dealt with this story, and there was just an outpouring of anger at the mayor. You know, how dare she? She's supposed to manage the city along with the council, manage certain things, you know, like snow removal, roads, part of the health system, and so on. Do that and leave free speech alone. And people were vehement about this. And I put out a statement on behalf of the Canadian Association for Free Expression at the time, and I'm quite pleased to having done that. The left has to be confronted, and the days of City Hall being able to restrict groups are absolutely wrong. This is what I put out as a statement. It's a press statement, so it's in the third person. For immediate release, Fromm tells Horwath, that's the mayor, to pave the roads and leave free speech alone. Hamilton, August 13th. Mayoralty candidate Paul Fromm has urged rival Andrea Horwath to tend to her real responsibilities and stop trying to shut down controversial meetings. Fix the roads, Andrea. They're a neglected disgrace. Stop trying to shut down meetings you don't like, such as the upcoming conference of the Dominion Society, he said this evening. Horwath recently sent a letter to meeting venues urging them not to rent to the traditionalist Dominion Society, who has planned a conference in Hamilton for August 29th. Horwath has also banned the Dominion Society from any use of city facilities. Quote, city venues belong to us all. All citizens should be able to book city rental facilities for peaceful gatherings, no matter what their ideology. We pay for them. That's what free speech is about, says Fromm, who is the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, which has been involved in numerous legal cases supporting free expression. Quote, city meeting facilities are not Andrea Horwath's private property, Fromm says. She seems to have her hands full with her own property issues. This is not the first time the mayor has tried to keep controversial views out of Hamilton. In the summer of 2024, she urged efforts to keep Diagonalon, a part of the protests against government COVID measures, from booking meeting facilities in Hamilton. The Diagonalon meeting proceeded at another venue. You talk a lot, you hear a lot of talk in Horwath's circles about diversity, Fromm notes. What about diversity of opinion? And yeah, there's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation quoted a hostel as having received this letter, and they were so happy, and yes, definitely they would never consider renting to a group like the Dominion Society. We welcome diversity and inclusion, and presumably the Dominion Society does not. But I thought, have you actually read what you just wrote? We welcome diversity and inclusion. Oh yeah, and furthermore, our owners, one is a third world immigrant and the other is not heterosexual. What was the word they chose? Non-binary. That means you don't know what the heck you are, male or female. Anyway, bully for them. But I thought you just said you believe in diversity and inclusion, but not the inclusion of ideas that are divergent from yours, right? There is so much mental slackness and hypocrisy. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm just getting back into this, and I will usually take an hour for these programs, but cutting it just a little short tonight. I will be back with you again next week. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. You can reach us through either portal.